about the let me tell you about the chicken grease. Love some things to make the people get out the seat. Everybody is good if you wanna clap your hands.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring satisfying tidbits of food culture. Our show hosts real conversations from everyday people navigating our food system and weekly chats with leaders in the world of sustainable food. Today, we'll be talking last week's food headlines with Meredith Mojaleski and the Hot Five with Marlo Dublin. Last week was an interesting week in the world of all things food and media. From McDonald's in Paris, Michael Pollan's food rules, good food and vending machines, and Gourmet Magazine. In the studio, we have Meredith Mojaleski. Meredith tweets at Meredith Mo on the subjects of sustainable agriculture, local food, and slow you name it. Welcome, Meredith.
Thanks, Nicole. Happy to be here.
Glad you're here.
Me too.
First up, let's talk McDonald's at the Louvre in Paris, France. Mm-hmm. So I read a BBC article about the Louvre moving into France, and I was like, wow, the Louvre in France. But actually, after further research, I saw that there are over 1,000 McDonald's in Paris. What are your thoughts on McDonald's in Paris?
Well, you know, I know it's been around in France for quite a while. Like I was saying to you earlier, I remember in my sixth grade, you know, French textbook that we had sentences that were included McDo, which is how they call it. So it's, you know, it's interesting because I feel like France and Italy is where slow food started, obviously. And
exactly.
They have so many food, so much food history and heritage about practices and how things are made. But it just goes to show you that, you know, in modern times, everybody is susceptible to the same kind of high fat, high sugar convenience foods that Americans are.
So. I think we have to definitely talk about the characteristics of McDonald's in France compared to the United States. According to this article, 80% of the food in McDonald's in France is sourced from local farmers. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you go online and Google McDonald's in France or in Europe, you'll be amazed just to see how they are totally connected to the local community in terms of the decor, the menu, and even the sourcing of local foods. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the model of produce from local farmers will creep into the U.S. market?
Well, I think I would like to see that happen for sure. And I think that American farmers produce enough volume to actually fulfill a lot of that. Maybe not in every single McDonald's in America. It's pretty big, but I think that all kinds of food companies and restaurants are trying to get onto the local food trend and the even sustainable, co-opting the word sustainable sometimes. But, you know, we've seen Chipotle do a pretty good job at improving their practices with local produce.
They've done an excellent job in doing that, you know, grass-fed beef and the
heritage pork,
totally
tomatoes, stuff like that. Although of course there's a whole other Imokale workers issues with tomatoes, but I think they've done a really good job for fast food,
right, starting somewhere. And it's funny, in reading this article that was in the BBC about McDo, which it's actually how they say McDonald's in France, it said in 2001 McDonald's chains had a stand at the iconic farm show in Paris, and that people just totally received them. I mean, they are not seen as some people in this movement here in America, when we say McDonald's, we cringe, but they're seen as a total partner. Beyond McDonald's, you talked about Chipotle. Do you know any examples of fast food chains that are doing local stuff? I can't think of any.
Besides Chipotle, I haven't seen a single other chain that's really come out and used local and sustainable, or even just local, as any kind of selling point and any real making a real commitment to it. So, I mean, but who's to say it couldn't happen? I don't know.
So speaking of quick food, the next news food headlines last week, a farmer in Germany has begun selling fresh local produce from vending machines. The machines are set up to dispense fresh milk, eggs, butter, cheese, potatoes, and sausages. The company has placed the machines on hiking trails. I'm a little unsure about the hiking trails.
They do that a lot in Germany. Yeah, it's a thing.
So if we have that same model in the United States, what are your suggestions on locations?
Well, first of all, I would say we have to really continue to build up our regional foodways, because that could never work, obviously, on a national scale. It would have to be, if it's going to be local, it's got to be people locally doing this with, you know, it would have to start small, obviously. But places for this, I mean, I would love to see that on the turnpike, you know, in rest stops alongside. I'm already seeing, actually, I just went to my CSA's vegetable farm yesterday for a farm trip. And
where did you go?
It's the farm at Miller's Crossing, which is near Hudson, New York. It was about a 3-hour drive away. They're an organic vegetable farm, certified organic. They're great. We had a really fun time, but I digress. On the way there and on the way back, we stopped at a couple of rest stops, and they had a big deal. They made a big deal out of having local apples.
Wow.
In the, inside the rest stops for sale. And actually, a couple of weeks ago, I went to Rochester. Same deal. There has like a mini farmer's market outside the rest stop. So it's kind of already happening. It's not a vending machine, but I think it's cool that it's catching on at the rest stop. So that would be my first place.
Have you seen anything in New York City, particularly in Manhattan or Brooklyn or any of the boroughs?
Not along those lines exactly. Although I've seen, there's a place I actually just walked by in Gowanus. I think it's... I forgot what the name of it's called. It's a little cafe. It's called like Something Root Cafe. But they had a farmer's market outside, like a mini farmer's market right outside their cafe. So that stuff's happening. There's another new restaurant called Basis Foods.
Yeah.
Or not restaurant. It's like a grocery
market,
store.
Yeah.
And they're kind of trying to do a similar thing. Again, not really a vending machine. I feel like vending machines, I don't know. I feel like it doesn't really lend itself to the local sustainable food thing.
So would you say
it's kind of a disconnect, because people make a big deal out of like knowing the farmer and knowing where it came from. So
you wouldn't say that the vending machines with the milk, cheese, and local products, you wouldn't consider that a 24/7 farmer's market?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah. It could work out. It could work.
So, and it's funny, some of the comments in this article, it's actually on Mother Nature Network, someone stated, and I don't know, I didn't do any further research about this, that Del Monte is starting to sell fresh fruits and vegetable snacks and vending machines in Florida. They have whole bananas, and the technology slows down the ripening process and maintains the yellow fruit for 5 days.
Wow.
They also buy fresh cut pineapple chunks and apples and all that stuff. What do you think about that?
That's pretty great. I mean, it's a start. It's better than processed food full of hydrogenated oil and high salt content. But I mean, it's not local. Obviously, it's not quite there. But that's okay. I mean, anything that will improve people's choices for healthy food and healthy snacking, I think, is a good.
I mean, it's creating a void. And then the last food headline, or in the whole vein of vending machines and fresh and local foods, Fresh Direct. Some people may or may not know Fresh Direct. It's a online grocery delivery service in New York City metropolitan areas. They have these meals, 4-minute meals. They're all fresh. I'm not sure if they use local ingredients, but they've come out with this vending machine thing. I think they tested it in like corporate offices in the city. And I think it's between $7 to $10, you can get a fresh meal right out of the vending machine.
I mean, it's a cool idea, but it sounds like the price point is not any different from going out to get lunch. And I'm obviously a proponent of cooking your own and scratch cooking. So I think it would be great if more people do that instead of, you know, relying on a vending machine with pre-made food. But it's still, I mean, it could work out. I'd be interested to see how it goes.
I guess it fills a void. I mean, if you're, you know, you're working late, like after 10, and you really need something fresh.
Sure. It's better than getting a packet of chips from the vending machine.
Right. I guess what would be, I mean, it would be great if they could use local. Use, you know, partner up some great farmers.
Fresh Direct does do a lot of good stuff with local food. I just don't know if it's in those 4 minute, in those 4 minute meals.
Right. Okay, Meredith, after a short break, you're going to stay with us and we're going to come back. We're going to talk social media and food.
Great.
And we'll talk more after the break. On Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. We're continuing our conversation with Meredith Mojaleski. Meredith is a CSA, or Community Supporting Agriculture Coordinator, and a communications professional for a nonprofit that focuses on helping schools find the way to source healthier food for our nation's children. Meredith, in the world of fading print media, how do you receive your news, particularly food news?
Well, I follow a lot of blogs with great, you know, great commentary on food issues, everything from cooking and actual, you know, enjoying the food to sustainability issues to social justice issues. There's a lot of different blogs out there. I always follow Grist. You know, yeah. Tom Laskawi on Grist. I hope that's how you pronounce his name. He has a difficult Polish name like I do, so it could be totally different. And Tom Philpott. And there's a great guy named Rob Smart. He has a really great blog called Every Kitchen Table.
I haven't heard of him. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's on Twitter. His name is Jam Butter on Twitter. So.
Oh.
Yeah. And actually, it's kind of funny because I used to do my RSS feeds with on Google Reader and have a, you know, just a billion things to read every day, and it just got really overwhelming. I you can never read everything ever. So I kind of gave up the Google Reader and just switched to Twitter, and now all the people that I follow on Twitter, it's like your own. Personalized RSS feed.
So at what moment did you realize that I don't need a newspaper, I don't need a magazine, none of this really matters? I mean, what's the moment when you really realized it?
Well, I still read magazines.
Yeah, I had that problem.
Vanity Fair is one of my favorite magazines, and I will read it until hopefully it never stops printing, but I'll read it forever. So But I don't know. I mean, I've lived online in some way since I was 10 years old. I'm 26 now. So
wow.
I've been using some version of the internet since I was 10. So it comes very, very naturally to go online for news and for what's going on and events and what's the latest. That's very natural to me. So I don't know that there was a certain point where I kind of I've never subscribed to a newspaper. You know, I have subscribed to some magazines, but for the most part.
Interesting. Very
online,
interesting.
Online news for me.
So we're talking about magazines. We have to segue to Gourmet Magazine.
Yeah.
And great article in the Observer, the New York Observer. And the title is After Print Deaths, Condé Nast Faces Digital Future. Mm-hmm. I think the most profound paragraph in this article, Jane Goldman, the editor-in-chief of Chow.com, said that food is like the original social application. Come on over for dinner and we'll talk. She also said that food sites and magazines will have to get more social to grab foodies.
Definitely.
and quote, and yet I think the food sites have been innovative enough in figuring have not been innovative enough in figuring out ways for foodies to talk to each other or share things with each other. Some people saying that basically food magazines will not survive.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm of two minds about it because I agree with I agree with what she said in terms of it being very social, and websites and blogs and social networking has in a sense taken over that conversation. But there are so many interesting things going on all over the world about food. You know, natural history of food, things like, I don't know if you're familiar with Sevira magazine.
Oh yeah, totally.
Sevira is great. It's not perfect, but I like the stories that they have about like heritage of foods, even if it's not, you know, oh, it's all local, sustainable. You know, that's even those things. They even cover things that have plenty of processed foods in them. Like there's a cake. I remember reading an article about some cake that was at this diner, and you start with like Duncan Hines mix, right, and that's in the recipe. So I find that interesting, just from a documenting of history kind of point of view. So I think we'll always need some kind of historical or investigative reporting about food for the people that are really serious about food.
And Savoir magazine, I think one of our hosts on Heritage Radio Network, Kathy Irwin.
Oh yeah, Kathy.
Yeah, I think she writes.
She writes online for them. Yeah, she writes online. She covers. She profiles farms, small farms.
For them. Her show is coming October 9th. Cheap Dates.
Cheap date.
Plug, Kathy. Yeah. So Meredith, you're definitely one of my favorite people on Twitter.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So we actually met via Twitter.
Yep.
And probably one of the first people when got on Twitter and moved to New York, you followed me. Please share with our listeners how social media has connected people around the subject of good food, and just how it's changed your life.
Many, many ways. I mean, it's I found people. I follow people everywhere from small farmers in New Zealand to, commodity farmers in Indiana, and not to mention all the people in the New York and Philadelphia and DC and LA and San Francisco worlds that are all what you would consider foodies. I follow journalists who do the food beat. I follow cooks. I follow the unknown chef, who is like he's really funny, but he's anonymous. He doesn't say where he works, and he has a great avenue for kind of just ranting and raving and not having to have his name attached to it, which is very funny. So it's great. I love people. I love to meet people, and I love to know what they're doing, what they're up to, and I think Twitter is great for that. Not just online, but I've met a lot of people in person now on Twitter. So it's great. I love to be able to share with people and know what's going on in their lives. So
who's that one person you've quote unquote met on Twitter, mm-hmm, and they actually reply back or they start following you? Cause I have that same thing. You get all excited. It's kind of like, oh my gosh, this food rock star. And to someone else, they may not really be a rock star. Who's that person for you that when they respond to you, you're like, oh my gosh.
Mark Bittman.
Oh, really?
Mark Bittman. Yes, we've had
several. Do tell us the story.
I can't remember what even we were talking about, but it was some recipe that he'd posted recently. I love Mark Bittman. I think he is just hilarious and heartwarming, and I just want to squeeze his little, you know, cranky cheeks. He's so cranky, but I love it. I just love it. If he was like a sunny, happy, friendly person, I wouldn't like it as much, but he's great. But we have talked online, and not talked, but just, you know, tweeted at each other. Who else? Some of the guys from Grist, we've had a couple conversations.
Okay.
And that's good. That's exciting. Some other food journalists. I've Obama Foodorama. Eddie.
Yeah,
Eddie,
I like him. Yeah.
It's a girl, actually.
Oh, it's a girl. Oh.
It's a girl. It's a lady. Her name is Eddie.
Okay,
I actually met her at the Greenhorns, fundraiser that was back in June or July.
Should I do another plug for Greenhorns?
Sure.
They're on Heritage Radio Network.
Oh, that's right. They have
a show. Yeah.
Keep talking about it. No, yeah, Greenhorns, they're great. Severin von Scharner Fleming, she's the head of the whole organization. There's a documentary, but it's also a kind of a clearinghouse for information for small farmers and people who are...
So what advice would you give to a listener, someone that's listening and they want to do some things via social media to connect more with what's going on in the world of food and food culture? Just some quick advice.
Well, there's, well, as I've said before, blogs are huge. They are still big, even though some people, I know that there's been some debate about Twitter kind of taking over the blog space. And once you join Twitter, then you stop blogging and, oh, it's this big deal. But I don't know. I mean, I think there's still a lot of really important stuff going on blogs. So
about Facebook?
Facebook is important, but it's more of a, it's a place to go for if you have a blog or an organization or a group in mind, and you can, you know, fan their fan page, and you can get information about them sort of put right onto your page or right into your inbox. So that's important too. But in terms of finding new things, blogging and Twitter is where it's at. Although I say this to everyone that talks to me about Twitter, it's not for everybody. It's really not. Twitter's not for everybody. And if you find it overwhelming and uninteresting, then that's okay. But I know the secret, which is that it's really it's a great place to a great way to meet people and share ideas. And for me, even, I happened to get a job via Twitter in a way. Not, it's not like there was a job opening and I applied and whoa, it's
so Twitter, what happened Twitter, how did job. It
basically I met people online on Twitter. I followed some different bloggers and just interesting people. I met them at the Brooklyn Food Conference in May, which is also where, well, I actually, we didn't know each other then, but
yeah,
I...
Yeah, we were tweeting together.
We were side by side, live
And we were
tweeting.
Like, where are you? What do you have on? And we never...
didn't make it happen. Yeah. But I met other people there, and they were like, oh, you have to get in touch with this person, and you have to be connected with this person because you do the same stuff, and I know you're looking for a job doing... My background is in public relations, and I used to work for, you know, a pretty corporate... pharmaceutical public relations firm, and they did great work, and I loved what I did there in terms of the learning the ropes of PR. But I knew that it wasn't for me. I knew that I needed to do something that I actually really cared about, which was food and nutrition and sustainability. And so, so it's been a culmination of probably like 14 or 16 months of looking, and I found this job that I really love working for this organization. So
yay Twitter.
It's all about the connections. I mean, I know they say networking and it's connections that you know, but it is.
It's true. It's really true.
I wouldn't have landed this job without it. So
please let all the listeners know, the ones that are on Twitter or people who are inspired to join Twitter, how they can find you on Twitter.
My name on Twitter is Meredith Moe. Meredithmo. That's my name, basically, because my last name, like we said, is very difficult.
Modulesky.
Doesn't look anything like that. So we just shortened.
Is that a famous name? Who's
actually, yeah, kind of. I have great uncles that played professional football, NFL. So
Modulesky.
Modulesky, yeah. Big Mo, Little Mo, and No Mo. That's how they were known in the media. So anyway, but yeah, it's great. That was always an in with my gym teachers as a kid. Because they'd be like, hey, Modulesky, is that
So yeah. Meredith the Modulesky, yes. Thanks for joining us.
You
on
are welcome.
Hot Grease.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
And we'll definitely have you in the studio again. We love you. You're great.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Back to Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Up next, in the studio, we have Marlo Dubling, a food and cookery enthusiast from Queens, doing the Hot Five. I'm hot. The Hot Five is a rundown of five things on fire in the good food movement. Influencers, farmers, celebrities, business owners, and chefs dish on their favorites. Welcome, Marlo.
Hi, Nicole.
So let's get right into it, starting with number 5 on the Hot 5 list. First of all, tell us what 5 things you're going to be doing.
Well, I found 5 snacks that are delicious and healthy.
We're always looking for healthy.
Absolutely.
So number 5 on the Hot 5 list.
Larabars. Ever heard of them?
Yeah, love them.
Oh, man. Pure natural energy.
What's your favorite?
I love the coconut cream pie. I love the whole family of pies.
I love the pecan pie. That's my favorite. The cherry pie. Oh, we can go on and on and on.
Oh, lemon pie. They're just great. You grab them. You're full for like 2 or 3 hours. They get you to the next meal. They're pretty inexpensive. I've seen them for $2 or $3 a bar. And you can get them online too. So larabar.com. You can try the pie family, but you can also try their cool flavors like Coco Mole, I just saw, PB&J.
Yeah, I saw, that one is really good. I wonder if Larabar is on Twitter. You think they're on Twitter? They should be.
They should be if they're not.
So number 4.
We have Route 11 potato chips, sweet potato chips. Have you ever tried those?
I have not.
Oh,
are they
delicious.
Based in New York? Where are they?
They're actually from Virginia, Mount Jackson, Virginia.
Ah.
Yeah. And they make other flavors like dill pickle and
pickle.
Yeah,
so
oh, they're delicious. I love dill anything. Chesapeake crab.
Okay, no, yeah. Someone the other day, my husband actually came home and was like, "Oh, you have to try these chips, the Chesapeake Bay, yeah, the crab, yeah. This has to be the same, yeah." Root. Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah, I want to take them and crumple them on a potato or baked potato or something. Delicious.
How many calories do you know?
I don't want to know, but but the sweet potato are pretty clean, natural, just really crispy. You feel like you're just biting into a baked sweet potato.
Hey, Nicole, this is Jack, and I just want to let everybody know the Route 11 chips are actually sold by Patrick in Heritage Foods USA, so if anybody's interested.
Ah, great. Yeah. Plug to Heritage Foods. Awesome. That is nice. Awesome. Okay. Is it heritagefoods.com?
It's heritagefoodsusa.com.
Thank you. Our great producer, Jack. So on to number 3.
Number
on the Hot
3,
five.
We have Mary's Gone Crackers.
Ever say that again.
Them?
Say that again.
Mary's Gone Crackers.
Never heard of it.
Okay. Well, they make a great line of seed crackers that are gluten-free. They're made with brown rice, quinoa, flax seeds, and sesame seeds. I like them plain, but they are great with hummus, guacamole, any kind of dip.
Really? So is it... Then give me something that I can compare it to.
They're like a cross between a flatbread and Melba toast.
Oh.
Yummy.
But they come in a wide variety of flavors. Black pepper. There's an herb flavor, a caraway.
Where do you typically buy them? I haven't seen those.
You can get them online, I know. You can also get them at Whole Foods.
Okay.
I've seen them there. I'm sure if you stop into your local organic or health food market, you could find them.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so I can do that's great with cheese, the crackers, Mary's crackers. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So number 2 on the Hot 5 list.
Number 2, Udi's granola nuggets.
Wow, you have some great ones. Never heard of it. Give us a scoop on that.
I love granola, but it's really hard to eat on the go because it falls all over everything in your book bag, on the floor. But these are nuggets. These are like bite-sized pieces of granola. And it's just a mix of honey and oats and nuts, cashews, almonds. Delicious. Really yum. You can even turn it into cereal if you want.
Sprinkle on top of yogurt? Crumble them?
Absolutely. Sure.
So what kind of bag? Is it in a bag that I can just kind of throw it in my laptop bag or in my purse where I can just pull it out during the day and get a few? Is it a small bag or?
It's a medium-sized bag, but it has a great zipper. So you can throw it in your laptop bag or your purse, take it on the go, and they store well.
Okay.
In the cupboard. So either way.
And number 1 on the Hot 5 list.
We have Medora Snacks, a small company from Long Island that makes Corners, which is a cross between popcorn and tortilla chips. So it's like a pop tortilla chip. Mm. Also come in a wide variety of flavors. I love sea salt, just plain.
Have you heard of that one, Meredith?
Yeah, you know what? I think I've seen them at Whole Foods. I just haven't gotten them yet. Yeah.
Say the name one more time.
Medora Snacks. Mm-hmm. And the type of snack is corners.
Do they also do those all the nuts? Like they have like an almonds and a cashews.
I haven't seen the nuts.
Okay.
I'll check them out.
Those look good.
That's great. All, wow. Three snacks. At least, what, two or three snacks? I'm sure if I didn't know about them. Meredith didn't know about some of our listeners. Thank you, Marlo, so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
For bringing us the Hot Five today. We look forward to having you again. We need to have you in more often. Yeah.
I'd love to come back. Thank you, Nicole.
Yeah, you can do the snack list. And you let me know if you get on Twitter. I don't know if you're on Twitter. We'll add it to our tag on heritageradionetwork.com so people want to follow you and you're doing your snack updates.
Thanks.
But thank
Appreciate
you for joining
it.
Us in the studio. Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled.